Advent is our time of preparation for Christmas. We've already lit candles and talked about faith and peace, and this Sunday we focus on love. You've heard me complain about love before. As a concept and as a word, we use the word love to cover everything from loving children to ice cream to pets. And then we throw in divine love, or what Sherry said, the idea that the universe is built on love, or God is love. The concept can be really confusing, and the word is too small and too broad at the same time. So where do we start talking about love? Well, this is Advent. We're preparing for the birth of Jesus, so let's look at Christmas first. In Luke's version of the Christmas story, when the angel Gabriel told Mary that she would bear a child, she sang, "My soul magnifies the Lord." And that is true for all of us. Our souls magnify our divine attributes, and love is one of them. Unity teaches that our souls magnify whatever we focus on. That's why thoughts are important. What we focus on expands, good or bad. So Mary heard this shocking, improbable baby news and focused immediately on love and joy. She was preparing for this child to be born into love. Just as we prepare ourselves through love for the birth of the Christ in us, the Christ is our recognition or awareness of the divine within. Love creates the conditions. Mary and Joseph created a safe place for Jesus to be born and to grow up and discover his divine identity. And love creates a safe environment for the light of God to shine in us too. When I was a child, I sang "Jesus Loves Me" and "Jesus Loves the Little Children." Did you sing those songs? As an adult, I realized Jesus said some pretty uncomfortable things about love. Love one another. Love your enemies. Love your neighbor as yourself, which implies loving yourself too. If we're going to claim we are expressions of God on the earth, then what would we express but love? Zora Neale Hurston said, "Love makes your soul crawl out from its hiding place." But I am going to submit that love is absolutely the hardest thing we have to do. Yes, we love our families and friends, at least some of our families and our friends. And Jesus talked about that too. He said, "If you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same?" Tax collectors were lowly. Aren't you embarrassed not to be better at love than a tax collector? It's easy to love those who love you. It's easy to love those you've chosen as friends. Easy to love children and grandchildren, easy to fall in love. Even tax collectors fall in love. The hard part, well, is twofold. Part of it is getting along with each other day to day. And love has lots of sub-issues to balance. Judgment and forgiveness, control and letting go, setting boundaries and serving others. That's why there are shelves and shelves of books on relationships. Personally, I believe our society at this point in history might be overthinking love. Qualities that used to be considered virtues, like sacrifice, service, falling on your sword for what you believe, now are sometimes labeled codependent or enabling. So first, I think even among the people that it's easy to love, we're often confused about love, how it's supposed to look and feel, what it means in terms of our behavior. And we mistake love for being nice, when I believe love is much fiercer than just being nice. Second, I think we're confused about how to love others in the world, people we don't know, how to love 7 billion people and the planet that we live on. Because Jesus was unequivocal about that, helping the poor. Fairness and equality are not optional if we claim Jesus as our role model. When he talked about love, he also talked about what it looks like and what actions to take. He actually sounded a lot like this new pope Francis, who has become a rock star talking about poverty, justice, and equality. You know, he was named Time Magazine's Person of the Year last week. There was a column in the Washington Post with the headline, "If you like Pope Francis, you're going to love Jesus." And the columnist, who is Catholic, said her friends are quoting Pope Francis as if he's brilliant and profound and these things have never been said before. And in fact, he is saying the same uncomfortable things that Jesus said. But you want to hear how it sounds from Francis? He said, for instance, "We think it's a worse tragedy when investment banks fail than when people starve to death." I told you it was uncomfortable. He said, "We've become used to the suffering of others. We are a society which has forgotten how to weep, how to experience compassion." He said, "A way has to be found to enable everyone to benefit from the fruits of the earth, and not to simply close the gap between the affluent and those who must be satisfied with the crumbs falling from the table, but above all, to satisfy the demands for justice, fairness, and respect for every human being." Now, he is not a liberal or a socialist. He has not renounced any teachings of the Catholic Church. He has suggested that Catholics place less emphasis on gays, abortion, and contraception, and get back to the basics of being Christian, which is to heed Jesus' teachings about loving our neighbors and caring for those in need. And he said the same goes for everyone, including atheists. It's not about theology. We're all on this planet together, and he said, we must meet one another doing good. So I got interested and looked up his background. You may know this. He had Italian parents, but grew up in Argentina. He didn't become a priest until he was 33. So he had worked as a chemical technician and a nightclub bouncer. He had regular jobs. He has lived on regular money. And so as Pope, he lives in a more modest apartment, and he wears less ornate vestments than the others. He said, "Seeking happiness in material things is a sure way of being unhappy. It's easier for a camel to get through the eye of a needle." Sometimes we're tempted to find excuses and complain, acting as if we could only be happy if 1,000 conditions were met. I can say that the most beautiful and natural expressions of joy I've seen in my life were in poor people who had little to hold on to. In other words, even poor people can be happy. Even tax collectors can love people who love them back. So can't we do at least as well? He took the name Francis from St. Francis of Assisi because St. Francis taught profound respect for the whole of creation. And the Pope says it is part of our work to protect the environment. But he also said, this is a difficult journey if we do not learn to grow in love for this world of ours. It's all an expression of love. Love our neighbors, love our enemies, love ourselves, love God. So, how are we doing with love as individuals and a church? How are we doing on loving? I ran across a video this week. It's actually an ad campaign for a clean water charity that's working, I think, in Africa. You may have seen this. It's third world people reciting first world problems. So, for instance, there's a person standing in the mud outside of a third world shack, with obviously no electricity or water, and they are stating the first world problem. "I hate it when my house is so big I need 2 wireless routers." Or there's a kid with a goat on a string, like a leash, who says, "I hate it when I leave my charger downstairs." And they're reciting it. It sounds as if they learned it phonetically. There's a little girl who says, "I hate when I leave my clothes in the washer so long they start to smell." And behind her, there are women at the river beating the clothes on rocks. So I started to show it to you, and then I was afraid it would sound preachy. Because the thing is, poverty is not news. We've known for a long time, 80% of the people in the world live on less than $10 a day. 80%. We know that 1 in 8 people are hungry all the time. And it's not just that children starve to death. Being malnourished lowers immunity and makes any illness worse. We know that clean water and simple vaccines save lives. So it doesn't take long doing an internet search to start feeling weighed down by all the need in the world. And you feel like you have to be Bill Gates to make a drop of difference. Then someone will say, "And what about the people in our own community?" And I just feel more guilty. It is easy to get overwhelmed and give up. It's called compassion fatigue. But Mother Teresa said, "If you love until it hurts, there can be no more hurt, only more love." And Jesus told us what it looks like. He said, "I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you took care of me. I was in prison and you visited me. Just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me." He's not just talking about community outreach. He's talking about oneness. When some of us are hurting, all of us suffer. Just like if you have a pain in a tooth or a toe, it dominates your whole attention. Addressing the needs of others would heal us all. Poverty is the common denominator in dropouts, crime, early pregnancy, and a host of other problems that cost us as a society. It does not serve anyone to have a permanent underclass in our country or in the world. And Jesus did not say they should take personal responsibility and pull themselves up by the bootstraps. He talked about the loving actions to be done on our part, just as you would tend to a part of your body that's hurting. "You fed me, you clothed me, you gave me clean water to drink, you tended to my health care and my emotional needs." There's a lesser known passage in Luke. I actually thought about our Christmas party when I read this. "When you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors, in case they may invite you in return and you would be repaid. When you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you. For you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous." Now that's interesting. You're blessed because they cannot repay you. You're blessed by the giving, by the expression of love. Now, repaid at the resurrection of the righteous, the author of Luke apparently believed Jesus would come back and take all the good people to heaven, which was a common belief at the time. For us, it means you'll be repaid by contributing good to the physical world and to the one mind. The measure you give is the measure you get back. I believe most of you are giving in various ways through this church, in the community. I know some of the things you're involved in. I am not talking about this to impose guilt. I am saying the way we treat other people is the way we express divine love. Some churches are great about helping the poor, going to disaster sites, building clinics in Africa. That has not been a unity tradition so far. Our founders were focused on the interior spiritual path, and we have emphasized that for a century or so. But we're beginning to look up and notice there are other people. And look for ways to take our enhanced spirituality and give it away. So I've mentioned before that Unity Worldwide wants to encourage more spiritual social action in the churches. And I think more of you are getting interested in that. There was a party conversation about it the other night. So if you have ideas for that, talk to Tim Alderman right here. He is our board president, and he's also on the board of Unity Worldwide. So he is our bridge to what's going on in the whole unity movement. And if anyone asks you what our church is doing, or someone says, well, what about the people here at home? We did just send nearly $3,000 to Operation Good Shepherd for families in Wimberley. That was part of the proceeds from the Howling Moon fundraiser. We participate in the Back to School Fiesta for kids who need shoes and school supplies. We offer the only pool membership program in Wimberley, which is especially appreciated by families with children. And it lets me make the point, service does not have to be strictly for the poor. We can fill any type of need, and we all eventually have needs. We tithe as a church every month. We send 10% of our expected revenue to places where we see spirit at work or to a person or organization that has fed our church. And it's in the newsletter every month where we have tithed. So maybe in the coming year, all we want to do is express love through service more consciously, more deliberately, as a church and as individuals. If you make a to-do list or you review at the end of every day, add the question, what have I done for the least of these? Or more broadly, how have I expressed love today, especially to those who may not love me back or even know me? It's easy to love those who love you. Our souls magnify divine love when we open to that flow. Just as Mary prepared the manger for her baby, divine love flowing through us creates conditions for Christ consciousness, which is that elevated and peaceful perspective we want to live from. So we've talked this Advent about faith, peace, and love. Next week is joy. Those were the promises of the Messiah. And renewing our faith, peace, love, and joy is how we prepare for Christmas. So let's take these thoughts into meditation with Kit.
Just take a deep breath and let it go. Deep breath and focus on opening that heart space. Opening that heart chakra. Visualize that space in your chest. Breathing into it. Expanding and expanding with every breath. Even further, an even larger opening, even larger expansive vessel. It still has shape, it still has a boundary, but it is a very gentle, a very soft. And it has the ability to expand and contract. The physical heart in our body expands and contracts without our ever, rarely thinking about it. It does what it does, what it is here to do. Consciousness practice of our consciousness as such. That we can move in and through this life in unconditionally loving ways without ever thinking about it. So that when we encounter someone in this life that may not be a friend or a family that we find easy to love, we are so grounded and practiced that we can indeed unconditionally love them without thinking about it. Give to ourselves that gift of choosing to open our hearts to ourselves to our neighbors, to our friends, to our family. By recognizing that those we don't yet know, or those we think we don't want to know, are actually those who will become part of our larger family. We send love to them. We open ourselves to them. For they are the teachers that teach us how to love. More expansively. Joyfully, we come from love. We are here to love. We are love.
Thank you.